Okay, it's my honor to celebrate Joe's science in this occasion. I first encountered Joe through his big books on string theory, and I did my PhD in the condensed matter physics in Korea, and after that I had to spend some time to serve my military duty, and I had some spare time, and I wanted to study something very different than I studied in my PhD. So I bought Joe's book from Amazon and read them cover to cover with great joy. And even without meeting Joe, I became to admire him for his both deep understanding and very clear explanation. And I met Joe in person only in 2006 when I came to KITP as a postdoc. And during the time, I mainly worked on condensed matter problem, but I occasionally discussed with Joe about gravity. And I remembered that Joe was always very generous with his time, and he was always willing to listen to even wrong ideas. And once I had a very deep confusion about active versus passive diffeomorphism, and Joe gently corrected me, but he didn't forget to add a word of encouragement saying that Einstein was once confused about that too, so you have a good company. I learned over the years that Joe was not only a great physicist, but also a very generous and caring person. And more recently, it happened that I've been mainly working on two subjects, and on both subjects, Joe left big footprints. So first one is the field theories for metals, and the second one is renormalization group. So although metals are rather familiar states of quantum matter, probably it is one of the least well understood states of quantum matter. And one a metallic state that is well understood is, of course, Landau Fermi liquid theory. And although people knew that Landau Fermi liquid theory is correct and is so working, I think Joe's 1992 paper on effective field theory and Fermi surface put this Landau Fermi liquid theory on a firm theoretical ground along with the work of Shankar. And then Joe also worked on so-called non-Fermi liquid state where there's no well-defined quasi-particles. And in 1994, Joe studied one non-Fermi liquid theory which at the time was considered as a candidate for the strange metallic state in high TC. And this was one of the first papers that studied the field theory of non-Fermi liquid systematically. And personally, I think this is the first paper that I read and felt I could understand the subject. And this paper also convinced me that it's an exciting research area, which partly led me to work on this subject. And then a lot of recent developments on this subject have been built on Joe's work. And then switching gear to renormalization group, of course, Joe had many great works on RG. And perhaps the first one is Joe's exact RG equation. And when I saw it, it struck me that Joe's exact RG equation can be viewed as being generated by differential operator that coarse grained your system and acting on the Boltzmann weight of your say Euclidean field theory. And then in the Wilsonian picture, the renormalized Boltzmann weight, of course, defines the RG flow, in this case, defined in the space of all couplings allowed by symmetry. Alternatively, this coarse grain operator can be viewed as a quantum operator acting on some quantum state whose wave function is given by this Boltzmann weight. And once you think this way, it's very natural to invoke the linear superposition principle to represent a Boltzmann weight with general couplings as a linear superposition of Boltzmann weight that include only a subset of couplings. And here, the subset is chosen such that the Boltzmann weight that include those subset span the full theory space as a vector space. Okay? And if you take this point of view, then I think this is the mathematical expression that Boltzmann weight with general couplings can be written as a linear superposition of Boltzmann weight that includes only a subset of coupling. And for any quantum field theory with any symmetry, you can choose such a subset of coupling. And here I'm just calling them conveniently as a single trace operator versus a multi-trace operator. So then in this viewpoint, the RG evolution of the action can be understood in terms of evolution of wave function defined in the space of those subset of couplings. And then instead of RG, the coarse graining giving you the classical flow equation, it gives a dynamical action for those couplings, for the single trace coupling. And because you generically have a metric as some coupling in your theory, this evolution is governed by some theory that includes dynamical gravity. And this may provide a way to understand the emergence of gravity in the ADS-CFT correspondence. And certainly, Zhou's earlier works and his input have heavily influenced how I think about this problem, and still struggling with some of the questions that Zhou raised over the years. And one of them is concerned about locality of the bulk action that governs the quantum RG flow. So in the remaining of the time, I will talk about a story that is related to this issue, but maybe from different perspective. So instead of considering RG flow here, I will think about real-time dynamics of quantum system. So this is about locality, and we all know that locality plays a very important role in quantum field theory. However, it is likely that locality, at least as it applies in quantum field theory, is not likely to be a part of the fundamental theory that includes dynamical gravity. And that's because when quantum fluctuation of geometries are strong, then there cannot be a well-defined notion of distance. Okay. However, the fundamental theory that includes gravity cannot be an arbitrary non-local theory either, because we know that when quantum fluctuations are weak at long distances, we have a field theory description of the system. And then in that emergent local field theory, the notion of locality is of course determined by the saddle point geometry. And because that geometry is set by state, we expect that the notion of locality should be set by state as well. Okay, so therefore, one can think about some class of non-local theories from which local theories emerge within some special set of states. And in particular, here, I'm considering what is called relatively local Hamiltonians, which is a non-local Hamiltonian, but local theory emerges within a subset of state that exhibit local structures of entanglement. And I will elaborate what I mean by local structure. So here is one simple example. So suppose I have L sites, and at each site I have n real scalar fields. So here I is the site index, and A is the flavor index. And then within the full Hilbert space of the system, I consider a sub-Hilbert space that is symmetric under certain symmetry. So here I consider a discrete subgroup of the usual O(n) symmetry. Here Sn is just the global permutation of the flavor. And there are n copies of Z2 symmetry where each Z2 flips the sign of the one flavor component of that n scalar field. And of course here the choice of the symmetry is input of the theory, and you can certainly consider other symmetric sector. And then one can ask what kind of basis state span this sub-Hilbert space, and to understand that it's useful to think about this single trace multi-local single trace operator. So this is sum of product of fundamental fields defined at different points on a lattice, and then one can show that the most general operators that are invariant under that symmetry group that I mentioned can be written as polynomials of this single trace operators. And then one can also show that the wave functions that involve only those single trace operators form a complete basis for that symmetric sub-Hilbert space. For example, here this is a state for that n scalar metal field whose wave function has only a single trace operator, and here T is the you can view it as a source, but this is a quantum state, and it's a label for this state, and then one can see that the general state in the symmetric sub-Hilbert space can be written as a linear superposition of those basis state. So in this sense, these states form a more complete basis of the symmetric Hilbert space. And then within this symmetric sub-Hilbert space, one can consider states that have local entanglement structure. And I define that a state has a local structure if the von Neumann entanglement entropy of any subregion is proportional to the volume of its boundary, where the volume is measured with respect to some lattice that provide a notion of distance. So whether such lattice exists or not is a property of state. And in general, there is no such lattice which reproduce the entanglement entropy of any subregion. And indeed, general states do not have local structure. But there are states which have this property. And in this case, the dimension topology and geometry of that lattice is intrinsic properties of state. Okay. So here are some examples. So here I consider state where I have only a bilocal operator. And then here, this Tij is the label for my state. And then this Tij, among other things, determine the amount of mutual information between side I and j. So in the limit that Tij is small, the mutual information between side I and j is proportional to modulo square of this Tij. So Tij can be viewed as a collective variable that encodes the how these fundamental fields are entangled with each other. And here I have drawn some picture for different state where this bond is supposed to represent not the bond with non-zero Tij, where the thickness of the bond is proportional to the mutual information between two sides. So state like this has no local structure, but if you have this kind of entanglement bonds, then this has a one-dimensional local structure, or you can consider entanglement structure of any dimension, like this. And then here, question is whether one can construct a Hamiltonian whose locality is determined by those of state, okay, without preferred background local structure. So here's one such Hamiltonian. So this is a Hamiltonian for that N scalar field. So here, this pi is the conjugate momentum of phi, and then this term is the usual ultra-local kinetic term. And again, this is the ultra-local quartic interaction, as is the case for the FIFO theory. And then this is the like a gradient term in the discrete form. This can be viewed as a Hopping term. And then the difference from the usual local Hamiltonian is that this sum over ij is running over all pairs of site, not on specific pairs of site. And then the Hopping amplitude is Tij is not a fixed number, but is a quantum operator that measures the pre-existing mutual information between site I and j. So the idea is that instead of assigning some fixed Hopping amplitude between site, you first measure the pre-existing entanglement and then assign Hopping between two sites in proportion to the entanglement. Okay? So for example, one can choose this quantum operator to be this one, and the expectation value of this operator with that state, with this state, with the bilocal entanglement bonds is proportional to the strength of the bilocal field. So in this sense, this operator is an operator that measures the geometry inherited from the entanglement structure. Okay. So this Hamiltonian now induces some Hamiltonian for the collective variable, because this state with labeled by the collective variable form a complete basis. So when you apply this Hamiltonian to a state like this, then the resulting state can be written as some linear superposition of state with different collective variable. So therefore, you can consider a quantum Hamiltonian that is induced for the collective variable. So here the details are not important. Other than that, you can you can derive one like this, and then here T is the multilocal collective variable, and here P is the conjugate momentum. Okay, so it's a quantum Hamiltonian for the collective variable, but in the larger limit, the effective Planck constant goes to zero, and one can use the semi-classical approximation. And one small technical detail is that when you turn on only the bilocal fields in the initial time, then under the time evolution, only bilocal fields are generated to the leading order in one of n. That's not general, but it's a property of this specific model. So here's a picture of time evolution for a particular state. So here I'm considering a state of say 40 site, where I have one-dimensional entanglement structure. And here I turned on only the nearest neighbor entanglement bonds on some lattice. And then this is the actual picture of the state that I obtained at later time. And as you can see, at later time, you begin to generate this further neighbor bilocal fields. And then the way the bilocal fields become bigger in real space describes how entanglement spread in the system. And for the initial time, your state have only short-range entangled, and there's a local structure, so Hamiltonian acts as a local Hamiltonian, but at later time, you end up generating entanglement between all sites globally. So in that case, the Hamiltonian acts very non-locally. So the intuition here is that the proper distance between two sides is determined by the range of the entanglement bond. So two sides, which are connected by some order of n entanglement bond, are considered to be within some proper distance, unit distance in the proper distance. And then this is the picture that shows how this bilocal field evolve as a function of time. So here, at initial time, I turned on only the nearest neighbor entanglement bonds. And then as time goes on, the range of entanglement grows. And at initial time, you can identify some linear growth, and you can identify the speed at which this entanglement spread in coordinate unit. And then here, different panel shows different initial state. And then here, what I'm showing is that if you choose a different state with different amount of initial entanglement, then the coordinate speed changes. Okay. So if you have an initial state with a larger entanglement than this state, then the entanglement spread at a much faster rate. And the fact that the coordinate speed at which entanglement spread become very sensitive to the initial state is a manifestation of the fact that this geometry is determined by the state. So one can plot the spread at which this entanglement spread versus the initial entanglement. This is log-log plot, and this line is the theoretical prediction, analytic prediction, in the small entanglement limit. And then here the point is that the coordinate speed depends strongly on the entanglement of the initial state, and that's because geometry that determine the proper notion of proper distance is state dependent. And in this case, there's neither upper nor a lower bound on how fast the entanglement spread when it is measured in terms of coordinate speed. And then here I have chosen initial state that has a two-dimensional entanglement structure. And then for the same Hamiltonian, now the entanglement spread respecting the two-dimensional local structure. So within this Hilbert space, that Hamiltonian acts as a two-dimensional local Hamiltonian. And then if you add small perturbation on top of, up to this point, I consider the initial state that is translationally invariant under lattice, in this case, a two-dimensional lattice, and the previous case is a one-dimensional lattice. And then now, on top of that translationally invariant initial condition, if you add some small perturbation that is localized in space, then this perturbation now propagate on top of the geometry that is created by this background bilocal fields. And then, roughly speaking, the effective theory that governs the propagation of this small perturbation is local only at length scale larger than the range of this background bilocal fields. And as a result, if you start with a different initial state, then the speed at which this this disturbance propagate differ greatly. And then a few final remarks. So in this case, the Hamiltonian as a quantum operator is a highly non-local Hamiltonian. However, it acts as a local Hamiltonian within a subspace. And then the dimension, topology, and geometry of that emergent local theory is set by the initial state to which the Hamiltonian is applied. Okay, and then if one insists that the Wheeler-DeWitt Hamiltonian arises in a similar manner, say, then one can in principle engineer a Hamiltonian for the matter field. Although it's very complicated, that Hamiltonian has this property of relative locality. Okay, and then I think this is one way to realize the idea that geometry is determined by entanglement, and in this relatively local Hamiltonian, this is implemented at the kinematic level. So essentially, entanglement is not, the geometry is nothing but some notion of the entanglement of your state. Okay, so I will end here. And to me, Joe, I will be remembering Joe as a true giant in physics, but also a very kind and generous person to others. Thank you for your attention.
So Seung-sik, can you go back to that nice picture that you had about the time evolution of entanglement bonds?
Yeah.
That one. So this naively reminds one of some type of growth problem or pattern formation in statistical physics. I mean, just the way it looks. So is there some type of effective description in terms of, I don't know, maybe one of those KPZ models like Kardar-Parisi-Zhang, I mean, with the stochastic dynamics, nonlinear stochastic dynamics, or any of the models that people use for growth, for description of growth?
Yeah, maybe I haven't thought about in that direction. So here,
I mean, definitely it looks like it, no?
Yeah, so here the physics is that if you have short-range entanglement bonds, then they can merge to create longer-range entanglement
so
bonds.
So the question is, can you write an effective description?
This is the theory. This is the full theory that governs the growth of the time evolution of this collective variable. It's a quantum theory in general, but this particular picture is the semi-classical solution in the large n limit. Yeah, it's a good question. I don't have a good intuition.
Veronica, just a second. So do you see a late time universality in the geometry of this effective description?
Here,
no matter what state you start with.
This particular time evolution describes a collapsing universe where the proper size of the system goes to zero. And I don't know what the true late-time state this will flow into. I don't know whether this universe bounces back to some to have a different local structure, but up to this point, it basically goes into global entangled state where the proper size of the whole universe become order of one.
But what I mean is, if you start with different initial states, so the spread of entanglement is different for them, depending on the entanglement structure, but would there be some late-time universality in the sense of different initial states having that same behavior? What Max and I called micro-equilibration.
So you're asking if there is a sense of some attractor
in the
time evolution. So, yeah, maybe. I don't know. But here, this is a unitary Hamiltonian. So in principle, the late-time state should remember any detail about the initial state, but probably it is hidden in a very non-local correlation. And probably my guess is if you just measure some local, here there's no really, in this state, there's really no notion of locality, but if you just single site observable, for example, probably they will be highly universal. But yeah, that's my guess.
There's plenty of time for more discussion, if anybody is moved. Well, there's so many interesting people here that I think we can use a long morning break, so I think we'll still come back at 11 after we thank Sangsik again.